Dear God, help us to understand your word so we can live by it. Amen. This Melchizedek was king of Salem and priest of God Most High. He met Abraham returning from the defeat of the kings and blessed him. And Abraham gave him a tenth of everything. First, his name means King of Righteousness, then also King of Salem, means King of Peace. Without father or mother, without genealogy, without beginning of days or end of life, like the Son of God, he remained a priest forever. Just think how great he was. Even the patriarch Abraham gave him a tenth of the plunder. Now the law requires the descendants of Levi who become priests to collect a tenth from the people. That is, their brothers, even though their brothers are descendant from Abraham. This man, however, did not trace his descendant from Levi, yet he collected a tenth from Abraham and blessed him who had the promises. And without doubt, the lesser person is blessed by the greater. In the one case, the tenth is collected by men who die, but in the other case, by him who is declared to be living. One might even say that Levi, who collects the tenth, paid the tenth through Abraham, because when Melchizedek met Abraham, Levi was still in the body of his ancestor. If perfection could not have been attained through the Levitical priesthood, for on the basis of the law was given to the people, why was there still need for another priest to come, one in the order of Melchizedek, not in the order of Aaron? For when there is a challenge of priesthood, there must also be a change of the law. He of whom these things are said to belong to a different tribe, and no one from that tribe has ever served as at the altar. For it is clear that our Lord descended from Judah, and in the regard to the tribe, Moses said nothing about priests. And what we have said is even more clear. If another priest like Melchizedek appears, one who has become a priest, not on the basis of regulation as to his ancestry, but on the basis of the power of the indestructible life. For it is declared, you are a priest forever in the order of Melchizedek. The former regulation is set aside because it was weak and useless. For the law made nothing perfect, and a better hope is introduced by which we draw near to God. And it was not without an oath. Others became priests without any oath, but he became a priest with an oath when God said to him, "The Lord has sworn, and you will not change his mind. You are a priest forever." Because the oath of this oath, Jesus has become the guarantee of a better covenant.
Evening, everyone. Well, that was all pretty straightforward, wasn't it? Nothing much hard tonight's passage. Tom did a great job, but what the heck did that mean? This is a tough passage, but friends, bottom line, tonight's passage is all about being better off than you think you are. That's always a nice feeling, isn't it? To be better off than you think you are. You know, you go to the auto bank, and there's actually more money in the account than you thought was going to be there. You put on a winter coat for the first time in the season, discover a $10 note that's been in a pocket ever since last winter. I love those moments when you actually discover that you're better off than you thought you were. That is what tonight's passage is all about. Not in terms of money, something far more important than that. Tonight's verses are written to tell its original readers that they were better off than they thought in terms of their relationship with God. So you have a look at the very last verse that Tom read for us, verse 22. Because of this oath, Jesus has become the guarantee of a better covenant. Now, the word covenant there is just another word for a contract. That's what the word means. It's a formal agreement. It's an arrangement. And the arrangement that verse 22 has in mind is the arrangement between us and God, the relationship that exists between us and God. And verse 22 is saying that Jesus has become the guarantee. He's the one who's secured a better arrangement, a better covenant between us and God. And the key word is better. You and I have a far more valuable relationship. You and I have a far more desirable relationship. You and I have a far more precious relationship with God than we could ever have had before if it had not been for Jesus. We've got a better covenant than has existed previously. That's what tonight is all about. And the passage wants us to understand this because Jesus is a priest in the order of Melchizedek. And that's where it starts to get a bit weird. As Tristan mentioned, it's not a new thought, this guy Melchizedek in the book of Hebrews. Hebrews has been throwing out these one-liners ever since chapter 5 that Jesus is this priest in the order of Melchizedek. We've been skipping over them because we've known that this chapter was coming up. But it's actually been a bit of a surprising statement for Hebrews to be making. Jesus is a priest in the order of Melchizedek? Well, the usual priests in Israel, in the Old Testament, they came from the order of Levi. That's what the Old Testament law actually specified. Let's rewind it a bit. A couple of weeks ago, remember, priests are a big deal because they acted as go-betweens between Israel and God. God is holy. God is without sin. We are imperfect. We are sinful. So Israel, just like all of us, we need a mediator to bridge that gap. We need a go-between to get across that barrier that our sin puts between us and God. And for Israel in the Old Testament, the go-betweens, they were the priests. And because they were so important as go-betweens, not just anyone could be one. You had to come from the tribe of Levi. That is what the Old Testament law said. Hebrews, however, it's been peppering us with this tantalizing fact that Jesus is a priest in the order of Melchizedek. That's a completely different guy to Levi altogether. Here in chapter 7, we're finally going to be told why that's important. And it's all to do with Jesus bringing us a better covenant. There's some twists and turns tonight, but if you get lost along the way, just keep coming back to verse 22. That's where it's all heading. You and I are so much better off with God because of Jesus. So much better off than it ever existed before because of Jesus. Let's dive in and see how it works. Basically, the reading works by looking at the two Old Testament passages where Melchizedek turns up. Because in the whole of the Old Testament, Melchizedek is only mentioned twice. There are three verses about the guy in Genesis chapter 14, and there's another verse about him in Psalm 110. So he's hardly a frequent flyer, but what Hebrews does is it takes each of those two brief passages and it uses them to explain, firstly, that Melchizedek is a greater priest than the Joe average Levitical priest. And secondly, that someone like Melchizedek is going to replace the Joe average Levitical priesthood. Firstly, it's the greatness of Melchizedek that's on view. Chapter 7, verse 1. This Melchizedek was king of Salem and priest of God Most High. He met Abraham returning from the battle of the kings and blessed him. Hebrews is here taking us back in time to the very first mention of Melchizedek in the Bible. He pops up in Genesis 14 where Abraham has just rescued his cousin Lot. Abraham is on his way home and Melchizedek just pops up out of the blue to meet him. Melchizedek blesses Abraham and then Abraham gives Melchizedek a tenth of his possession. It's all over like that. Over before you know it. Nevertheless, Hebrews takes us back to that very brief encounter and points out that, hey, look, the way Genesis records that encounter, Melchizedek actually doesn't seem to have a beginning or an end. There's no introductory remarks about who this Melchizedek is. There's no mention of what he then goes on to do after he's met Abraham. He's just there. The way Genesis records it, it's almost as if he's timeless. Verse 3, without father or mother, without genealogy, without beginning of days or end of life, like the Son of God, he remains a priest forever. Now, some people even suggest that Melchizedek is so mysterious in the way he appears that he may even have been Jesus popping up in the Old Testament in a surprise visit. I don't know whether that's necessarily the case. Hebrews' point is essentially that Melchizedek's priesthood, as it's written up in Genesis, clearly is better than the Levitical priesthood because of the way Genesis records it. It sounds like he's going to stay a priest forever. There's no sense in which Genesis explicitly says that his priesthood would ever come to an end. He's a mysterious person. His mystery teases the fact that he's greater than even Abraham, that his greatness will exceed even Abraham's descendants, the Levitical priests. That sense is compounded by the fact that Abraham gives him a tenth of his possessions. Verse 4, just think how great he was. Even the patriarch Abraham gave him a tenth of the plunder. Now, the Lord requires that the descendants of Levi who become priests, that they collect a tenth from the people, that's their brothers, even though their brothers are descended from Abraham. This man, Melchizedek, however, he doesn't trace his descent from Levi, yet he collects a tenth from Abraham and blessed him who had the promises. You feeling the point? Abraham, the great high grand poobah patriarch of all Israel, Abraham, the person from whom the whole Levitical priesthood descended from, Abraham gives a gift to Melchizedek. Clearly Melchizedek is the greater of the two. He's the one getting the gift. It's reinforced by the fact that he then blesses Abraham in return. Verse 7 says, without doubt, it's the lesser person who gets blessed by the greater. Getting a feel of what's going on? Roll it together. What Hebrews wants us to see is that Melchizedek's meeting up with Abraham in Genesis, it's short and sweet, but it clearly reflects that Melchizedek was the greater of the two when they met. It's like on the news. You know, on the news, sometimes they show you when the Queen is opening a building or doing some sort of function. And on the news, you'll see that there's all these people lined up to meet her. And as they meet her, they bow and they give her bunches of flowers and they give her gifts. And even if the sound was turned off on the telly, just looking at the picture, you can see straight away who the important one is in this picture. That's the sort of scene that developed when Abraham met Melchizedek. The way it just played out, Melchizedek is clearly the greater of the two. And the implication is that Melchizedek must therefore be a greater priest than the Levitical priests who came from Abraham. That's impressive. Melchizedek has a priesthood that is greater than the Levitical ones. It's going to get more impressive because Hebrews now swings from Melchizedek in Genesis to the other mention of him in the Old Testament, this time a verse in Psalm 110. Now, this is a psalm that is actually mainly about the coming Messiah. Psalm 110, if you go away and look it up, it's primarily all about the coming descendant of King David, who will be God's king over all the world. It's a psalm about the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. But what the psalm does is it drops a bombshell when in one verse it says that as well as the Messiah being a king forever, the coming Messiah is also going to be a priest forever. And you'll never guess, in the order of Melchizedek. And Hebrews wants us to understand that that has massive implications. Verse 11. If perfection could have been obtained through the Levitical priesthood, for on the basis of it the law was given to the people, why was there still need for another priest to come? One in the order of Melchizedek, not in the order of Aaron, which is Levi. See what that's saying? If the average, normal Levitical priests were so good, why does Psalm 110 predict that there's another sort of priest to come? Clearly this new king, super priest, is needed to be able to do a better job than Levitical priests. But hang on. If this Messiah priest is coming to effectively replace the Levitical ones, the Levitical priests have such a critical role in the Old Testament law, that must mean that the entire Old Testament law is about to be overhauled as well. Verse 12, for when there is a change of the priesthood, there must also be a change of the law. Friends, I would love you to be sensing the chain reaction that is starting to build in the logic here in Hebrews. The sense of enormity of what is actually happening here. If Psalm 110 says that the coming Messiah is also a priest, that must mean that there is a whole new way of relating to God that is different to the Old Testament. That must be arriving also with the Messiah. And, verse 16, what we have said is even more clear if another priest like Melchizedek appears, one who's become a priest not on the basis of a regulation as to his ancestry, that's how the Levitical priest became a priest, but on the basis of the power of an indestructible life. For it is declared, and here's Psalm 110, you are a priest forever in the order of Melchizedek. Friends, this just jumped to a whole new category of bigness. If this new Messiah is also going to be a priest forever, that means that this psalm is suggesting that the old priests are going to be replaced forever. In other words, the whole Old Testament law is gone forever. That's massive. Verse 18, the formula regulation, that is the law, is therefore set aside, because it's weak and useless. For the law made nothing perfect. And a better hope is introduced by which we draw near to God. Are you beginning to see why Hebrews has been wanting to tell us why Jesus is a priest in the order of Melchizedek? Because Hebrews has been wanting to tell us lots of big things about Jesus so far. It's been, ever since verse 1 of chapter 1, it's been saying, hey, Jesus is amazing. He's amazing for helping us understand who God is. He's amazing for helping us have a place in the new creation to come. He's amazing because he's a great high priest. And now it's wanting us to know that he is even more amazing, more mind-boggling amazing than you can imagine, because he's a priest in the order of Melchizedek. And that means, A, he is greater than the Levitical priest, care of Genesis, and B, Jesus is going to be the replacement of the Levitical priests, care of Psalm 110. And that, together, changes everything. With Jesus, we are bumping up against something huge. The whole Old Testament way of thinking, the whole Old Testament way of dealing with God has now been superseded. Superseded. All the more certain, because that's what God promised. Verse 20. And it's not without an oath. Others became priests without any oath. In other words, the Levitical priests became priests because they were born into the role. But this coming priest that Psalm 110 has been talking about, he becomes a priest because God promises it. He became a priest, verse 21, with an oath, when God said to him, and here's the quote from Psalm 110 again, the Lord has sworn and will not change his mind, you are a priest forever. And verse 22, because of this oath, because of what God has promised, well, now we're back to our punchline. Jesus has become the guarantee of a better covenant. Friends, I know tonight's passage has got some twists and turns in it, but if you can get your head around them, they're worth the ride. Within the book of Hebrews, Jesus has just jumped to mind-boggling proportions of bigness. He is not just a great high priest. He is a priest in the order of Melchizedek. And when you chase down the implications of what that means in the Old Testament, that means that Jesus enables us to draw nearer to God in a way that is closer and more assured and more intimate than has ever existed before. He has superseded everything. I don't know if you're into technology, but at the moment there's a bit of a buzz going around that there's going to be a release of an iPhone 8 later this year. I think it's actually going to come about around the time of my birthday, Sue. This one's going to mark the 10th anniversary of the iPhone, and rumours are it's going to be huge. Once you've seen the iPhone 8, you're going to want it. Once you've tried it, you'll never want to go back to any other model. That's what they're saying. Friends, Hebrews is wanting us to understand that that is what Jesus has done with the old covenant of Israel. That's what it wants us to get tonight. Jesus has brought into an effect an intimacy with which we can draw near to God. Jesus has brought into effect a connection with God that is so extraordinary, it leaves every other arrangement for dead. Which, remember, for the original readers of Hebrews, this is a powerful lesson. Remember, this is written to Jewish Christians who are in danger of drifting back to Judaism because it was just more familiar to them. And tonight's passage is saying, why on earth would you do that? Jesus blows everything else out of the water. He has brought in such a better covenant than the old one. Don't go back to that. He's actually brought in the perfect covenant, which is where the iPhone example breaks down, because you can imagine that there's always, you know, you can guarantee there's going to be an iPhone 9 and a 10 and an 11. Jesus is bringing in actually not just a better covenant, a perfect covenant. As we will discover in the rest of chapter 7 and chapter 8 and chapter 9 and chapter 10, which is going to flesh this out over the next few weeks, Jesus actually brings in an arrangement with God that you just cannot ever improve on. For now, though, I think there's enough to take in. Because even though you and I may not be Jewish Christians in the exact same situation as the original readers, it is always nice, is it not? It is always a timely lesson to be reminded just of the greatness of Jesus Christ, the bigness of what he has done, the extraordinarily close-knit relationship that we enjoy with God because of him. Because you might have noticed tonight is one of those bits of the Bible. It doesn't actually tell us to do anything tonight, does it? Instead, this is a bit of a Bible that just wants us to understand something. Okay? This is a part of the Bible that just wants us to appreciate something. This is a bit of the Bible that just wants us to come to grips with something, come to terms with something. An incredible thing, which will actually change the way you look at life. In one of these commentaries, John MacArthur Jr. tells the story of a black slave in America who lived just prior to the Civil War. The owner of this particular slave died, and very unusual for the time, the master left the slave an inheritance of $50,000. $50,000. That's actually still a lot of money in my books. Back then it was an astronomical amount. Astronomical. And so the bank manager called the slave into his office and carefully explained to him that he now had $50,000 in a bank account in his name. And having explained it all, the manager asked the slave if he had any questions. And the slave replied, "Please, sir, do you think I could have 50 cents? I'd like to buy some cornmeal." He had no idea how well off he was. It's almost as if he couldn't take it in, couldn't imagine the extent of his blessings. And it showed. He was still worried about buying a bit of flour. That can be like us and Jesus. Despite what we have because of him, despite being the recipients of a closer covenant with God than has ever existed before, the perfect covenant, at times it's as if we just haven't taken it in. And it shows in what we worry over, what we chase after, what we complain about, what we ask for. Friends, Jesus Christ enables you and I to draw closer to the God of all the universe. Without being vaporized for our sinfulness, we get to draw closer to God than has ever been possible before. Extraordinary. I know, let's work hard to not forget this. Let's try and make this the topic of our conversations, perhaps a bit more than we do. Let's spur one another on to loyalty to Jesus because of this. In fact, let's, even when we're on our own, let's preach it to ourselves. You know those times when life is hard and life is struggling and life is overwhelming? You can draw close to God as one of his children. Can you believe that? It's because Jesus Christ is a priest in the order of Melchizedek, and he has unlocked the floodgates of heaven. And that changes everything for the better. I'll pray. Father, this is a hard passage to understand at parts, but thank you so much for what it is saying to us. Thank you that we can draw near to you. Thank you that we can draw near to you in a way that is extraordinary. That we have an intimacy with you as our Father because of Jesus. Father, we don't deserve that. And there's still things we need to discover in Hebrews about how it's happened. But Father, this evening, we just want to humbly fall before you and thank you for it. Thank you that no matter what is going on in our life, we can draw near to you for grace and peace and strength to get through it. Father, what you have done for us is just wonderful. Help us to never forget it, to always appreciate it, to always value Jesus. Amen.